Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. On Monday, a federal appeals court denied a rehearing on former Governor George Ryan's appeal. The request was denied in a three-sentence statement. The 78-year-old ex-governor is nearing the end of his six-and-a-half-year sentence and has been seeking an early release. He was convicted of corruption back in 2006. In any other state, the words ex-governor and prison being so close together would constitute a bit of a surprise, but Illinois can boast two such jailed governors. The other, of course, is former Governor Rod Blagojevich, who was convicted on numerous charges related to attempts to, in essence, sell the Senate seat vacated by then-President-elect Barack Obama. But there is more. State lawmaker Derek Smith was drummed out of office just last month for allegedly taking a bribe, and former Dixon City Comptroller Rita Crundwell is accused of misappropriating more than $53 million from Dixon to support a horse breeding operation. What's going on here? Just how corrupt are we here in Illinois? And how do what are, let's face it, just the most famous and recent incidents of political corruption here in the state impacting how others see this state of ours? We explore Illinois politics and corruption on today's show, and it is a timely topic, not just because of the political scandals that I mentioned, but later this week, actually this weekend, the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute will host an ethics and reform symposium on Illinois government, and the three folks that are joining us today will be speaking at that symposium, and let's welcome in our guests. Dick Simpson is a former Chicago alderman and is now a professor of political science at the University of Illinois Chicago. Dick, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Jim Nolan, a recently retired senior fellow in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the U of I. Jim, welcome to the show. And Richard Winters is a professor of government at Dartmouth and a former co-editor of State Politics and Policy Quarterly. Richard, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you.
We also welcome you to the conversation at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. That phone number again, 333-WILL or 800-222-9455. WILL. And I want to begin with a question that's really to all of you, but I'm going to start with Jim. And it's very simple. How corrupt are we?
Well, we're among the most corrupt states. There's no doubt about it. And I have to turn to research, which was led by Dick Simpson. And he showed that Illinois, the Northern District of Illinois Judicial Circuit District, had more convictions for public corruption than any judicial district in the nation, and as a state, we had more convictions than most other states.
All right, Dick Simpson, pick us up from there.
Well, and to put it in numerical terms, we had 1,848 convictions in the state for corruption. 1,531 were in the metropolitan region. In a report we issued after the one Jim and I did on the general level of corruption, we tackled specifically the problem of suburban corruption. Because it's often been thought, well, all the corruption in the state is only Chicago. But we found more than 60 suburbs, more than 100 individuals, 17 mayors and city, town presidents who were guilty of corruption in a variety of schemes in the suburbs. Downstate, there are obviously the cases like Dixon that are very flamboyant. Smaller rural areas sometimes have less corruption, but overall, we have a culture of corruption in Illinois that needs to be cured.
Richard Winters, you're in New Hampshire now, am I right?
I am, but I was actually raised in Harrisburg and in Murfreesboro and am a SIU Carbondale graduate in political science.
Well, you're now in a position where, since you are outside of the state, maybe you could be in the best position to examine it from this standpoint. How do people outside of Illinois perceive this state when it comes to politics and corruption?
I suspect that people outside Illinois perceive it very much like I think my family perceives it, those still living in and residing in Illinois, that it is, like Dick and Jim have mentioned, a very corrupt state, particularly so upstate. And let me embellish just sort of the historical record here, and Dick Simpson can correct me if I got the numbers wrong. You're right, of course, about Ryan and Blagojevich in terms of current governors in the pokey. But if you look historically, of I think the last nine governors, basically the governors when I came of political age in the 1950s up to the present time, five of those governors have been indicted by a number of juries, and four of them ended up in jail. That is, four of nine governors since the 1950s have actually been jailed for corruption. And, you know, there's a wonderful Turkish aphorism, a fish rots from its head. And I think many Illinoisans believe that Illinois is particularly corrupt, in part due to the astonishing record of its governors. And there's just no comparable example across the nation. You probably have to go all the way back to Louisiana in the 30s in order to get this kind of record of corruption and politics in Illinois.
It's also been going on for a long time. The first corruption conviction was in 1869, which involved city council members and county commissioners in Chicago and Cook County. So it's not something that just developed overnight, but has a particular history related to machine politics, mostly, in my experience.
I'll one-up Dick, going back to 1818, when Ninian Edwards, as territorial governor and then later as governor, observed that there was a great deal of using free whiskey to buy votes back in the in the new state. So we have a long tradition.
All right. I have to ask this of all of you. One of our reporters, Jim Meadows, challenged me to ask the question directly. What's in the water here in Illinois? Is there something endemic to this state that leads to this?
Well, we have a history of corruption that's created a culture of corruption. By that I mean both people in public life and citizens have an expectation that corruption is okay, or part of the pattern, or you have to go along, or the system made me do it. The sense is, you know, if you have a building inspector and you're not liking the results, you simply give the building inspector a bribe. That's thought to be sort of the way you do business in Illinois. And as Jim's research has shown, that's what business people think and others outside the state think, and is one of the reasons we have some difficulty attracting businesses to the state of Illinois.
Jim, tell us about
that. Not only do we know that we have a culture of corruption, but it's perceived that way by others.
Let me add just the view from Washington, D.C.
Okay.
The paper that I'm sort of talking about at this conference this coming week was reviewed by the former head of the Public Integrity Section of the Department of Justice, basically the arm of the Department of Justice responsible for prosecutions for public integrity convictions. And the current head of the Public Integrity Section, the former head's a guy named Lee Radek, and the current head's Jack Smith. And both of them basically echoed what Dick Simpson just said. First of all, that Illinois is more corrupt than the typical state. In fact, they would argue that Illinois is more corrupt than you would expect. And both Smith and Radek argued that there appears to be a kind of a culture of political corruption in Illinois, that this is just the way the world works politically in the state.
I have a little data to back up what Dick and Richard have been saying in the past few moments. I took a survey last year of a national sample of residents, of citizens, and the basic question was, would you name one or two states that you think are the most corrupt in the nation? And Illinois came in third after California and New York. And one-third of the sample, unsolicited, named Illinois. And among older people in the sample, those over 45, 50% across the nation named Illinois as one of the most corrupt states in the nation. So the reputation is a very unfortunate one. And I did another survey of 60 development officials in Illinois, the people who try to recruit businesses from outside to locate in their communities. And two-thirds of the development officials said corruption was either a problem or a significant negative problem in their efforts to recruit businesses to Illinois.
I am curious, let me jump in and just ask about the one specific survey question about the most corrupt states. What immediately occurred to me when you said those top three, being New York, California, and Illinois, they have the three largest cities in the U.S.
Also the three most heavily populated, three of the five most largest in terms of population.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at. And I'm wondering, okay, so what is the correlation there? Is there a lesson to be gleaned from that, that you put too many people in space?
Well, there are some other places that are smaller that do have real corruption. Examples would be Louisiana, Miami, and Washington, D.C., partly because the feds like to try the cases there. So their corruption rate goes up, but those are areas with smaller population that also have high corruption rates. The thing that's common about places like New Jersey, Louisiana, and Florida is that they also have machine politics in one form or another. So it seems that there's a relationship between the political tradition of a state far beyond its size that contribute to level of corruption and the what we're calling a culture of corruption.
Let me add one other factor that I think is particularly applicable to Illinois in two different ways. We've already identified here just population size, and just as a footnote here, it turns out that Jim Nolan's survey people were very, very well informed, because if you look at the total number of public integrity convictions over the last 30 plus years, it turns out that the rank order is New York, California, and Illinois in terms of the number of corruption corruption convictions over that time period. But also what characterizes these states is not only large population size, but also these states are remarkably heterogeneous in terms of their population. And in terms of Illinois, that heterogeneity has, I think, two sort of traits to it. One is kind of an ethnic heterogeneity, and the second is a regional heterogeneity. That I do believe that part of the culture of corruption here is that officials believe when they embezzle, when they extract illegally, they're taking from people unlike themselves. And that's going to be more true in states that have these heterogeneous traits about them. So its size and heterogeneity, I think, lead to these kinds of profound cultures of corruption. That's true of Miami as well.
Are you saying, in essence, that those who are corrupted and maybe, you know, take a bribe or have some sort of inappropriate relationship with a lobbyist or something like that, that ultimately what in their mind, they're rationalizing it by saying, well, what I'm trying to do is get some money for my own versus somebody else.
I'm getting money for my own, but I'm not taking it from people like me. I'm taking it from people unlike me. Hmm. And it's much easier to take from those unlike you than those like you. If you look at the opposite ends of the sort of the corruption, our understandings of corruption, what are the least corrupt states? Well, it turns out the least corrupt states, if you look at the public integrity convictions, are states like Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Nebraska, the Dakotas. What characterizes them? Well, spatially, some are big and some are small. They're all small in population size, but also in terms of their population heterogeneity, they are basically homogeneous states.
Another way of looking at it is if you look at the neighboring states to us, which have some of our characteristics, places like Wisconsin, Minnesota, and so forth, nearly all the Midwestern states have less corruption by a lot than we do. Indiana, there's a paper being delivered at the conference that shows that corruption is less in Indiana than it is in Illinois.
In my survey of the national sample, only 2% or less of the sample mentioned any of the neighboring states of Illinois as being among the most corrupt, so we really stand out among our Midwestern neighbors.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing corruption in Illinois politics and how others perceive this state of ours with three guests who will all participate in a symposium on ethics and Illinois government later in the week, over the weekend. Nick Simpson is a former alderman and professor of political science at the University of Illinois Chicago. Jim Noland is a recently retired senior fellow in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the U of I. And Richard Winters is a professor of government at Dartmouth and a former co-editor of State Politics and Policy Quarterly. We'd also like to know what you think. Is Illinois the most politically corrupt state in America? How have recent political corruption scandals impacted your perception of what government can accomplish here in the state or nationwide? For those who live here in Illinois, does it bother you how the state might be perceived by others around the country? And if you live outside of the state of Illinois, what is your impression of what goes on in this state? Call us this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email your question or comment to will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. And I should point out, we also welcome your questions on WILL's Facebook page, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. And we do have a caller on the line. Sylvia is in Champaign. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. I was very struck by the guest's characterization of the Dakotas is homogeneous because there are large Native American populations in both of those states, and when you describe it as homogeneous, you're kind of forgetting about them.
All right, Jim.
Yeah, I think that was directed to me, and that is actually a very fair comment, and I will amend it. But nevertheless, if you really look at the figures in terms of particularly ethnic heterogeneity, the Native American population, while it's there, is one of the key components of the population in North Dakota. But what, of course, the Dakotas lack are significant numbers of other kinds of ethnic groups. But the listener is absolutely right. The Native Americans are obviously a part of a heterogeneous population. And I'm not claiming that they're all German Catholic, German Lutherans in the Dakotas, like Garrison Keillor. But nevertheless, relative, for example, to Illinois, it's a relatively homogeneous state.
Let's go next to David in Urbana. Good morning.
Yes, it seems to me that in some degree it's a matter of perception. I don't think that anyone can excuse Illinois for its culture of corruption. But no one seems to be mentioning the state of Texas. And how many of our House leaders, I know both Tom DeLay and I can't think of the Democrat who was a Speaker of the House, both of whom have either gone to jail or have been indicted and are still awaiting trial.
There are at least two congressmen from Illinois. The one that leaps immediately to mind for most people is Dan Rostenkowski. So we've had two Illinois congressmen end up being convicted of corruption in the period since the 1970s.
And Illinois is also notorious for its gerrymandering. But Texas as well. It seems to me Texas far surpasses California and New York. And yet people don't, I think, instantly think of this. It's one of the leading states right now in trying to prevent minorities voting. I believe they recently sent out a letter to people they were dropping from their roles. If you're alive, if you're not dead, please reply to this letter.
This is Richard Winters. The listener raises a really interesting question about where you draw the line with respect to corruption. I think when I and Dick Simpson and Jim Nolan think about corruption, I think we're probably thinking more in terms of trading authority for cash or for other valuable goods. And the listener really raises the issue from a political scientist point of view that gets closer to the idea of unethical but plausibly illegal manipulations of the political system, not for direct personal gain, but for, in Tom DeLay's case, for the collective gain of the Republican Party in Texas. Now, I'm not going to say it's not corrupt. I'm just saying, you know, there's a difference between engaging in acts that redound to the benefit of your political party and engaging in illegal acts that benefit you personally and directly.
Well, and I would also imagine, and I'll throw this out maybe first to Jim, but then to all of you, that we also need to draw a distinction between ethics and law. I mean, ideally, our laws reflect the ethical intent of a society, but there are any number of things that someone might do that are perfectly legal, but we might say are ethically, at least in a gray area, if not out-and-out unethical.
One of my readers in a column I write for downstate newspapers refers to that as big C corruption and little C corruption.
Okay.
And the little C corruption often refers to acts that may not be illegal, but are viewed as certainly corrupt or corrupting. And the redistricting could be an illustration of that. It's certainly legal what has been done, but it results in Illinois in a skewed system in which the incumbents are much more likely to be elected than they would be in the Iowa system, which uses a computer not to draw the lines, but uses it much more heavily in assisting the technicians who draw the lines in Iowa.
And let me throw out to Richard and Dick, it certainly seems as if you could say perhaps that these are examples are all part and parcel of the same thing when it comes to how people perceive the state of Illinois. Is it safe to say that something like gerrymandering plays a factor along with the full-fledged sort of financial political corruption that we have seen? I'll throw that out to Dick first.
Well, we have all sorts of malfeasance, people doing things badly as Jim was saying, were unethical. And we don't seem to have any curb on it. But Illinois, it seems to be uniquely situated in terms of the level of corruption and the seriousness of it. Richard earlier had mentioned the four governors have gone to jail. There are lots of, in the 1,848 convictions that we have in Illinois, there are lots of other examples. Even the current one down in Dixon, you wouldn't normally think of a small, relatively small downstate town having its comptroller steal $53 million. That's an enormous amount of money. Likewise, in our suburban corruption report, like the Tribune and others, we found many suburbs in which they have been doing nepotism and patronage, which may technically still be legal the way they're doing it, but it ends up running up huge debts so that some suburban taxpayers are paying 1,000% more in property tax than they would have been if they had had a fair and honest and efficient government really looking out for their interests.
Richard Winters, anything to add?
No, I think Dick is correct about that.
All right, let's take another call. We have Steve on the line from Urbana. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'd like you to comment on the following. When then-Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn in January 2009 convened an independent panel called the Illinois Reform Commission to study and recommend laws that would reform and clean up Illinois state government, they acted promptly and thoroughly and submitted a report which could actually save Illinois taxpayers and the Illinois government billions of dollars annually. That report has been all but totally put in the trash receptacle, and instead the government, the press, and many legislators have found new scapegoats instead of acting on their own ineffective and corrupt behavior, the new scapegoats being retirees, being unions, and others. So the public has now been pitted against one another rather than moving ahead with sound recommendations, independent recommendations. And by the way, the person who chaired that was Patrick Collins, former federal prosecutor. And also, parenthetically,
Sheila Simon.
Simon, who's now lieutenant governor, was part of that commission.
All right.
So I guess the question is, what's it going to take for the people of Illinois to finally say no more of this, okay, and actually demand effective government, because the government that they have now is costing them billions and billions of dollars, no less the reputation of the state.
All right. Thanks very much for the question, Steve. Dick Simpson, any thoughts?
Yes. First of all, he's quite correct. The commission report is an outstanding report. It does make specific recommendations. And Pat Collins has gone on since to write a book on curing the corruption in Illinois, which should be required reading in all high schools in the country, as well as among citizens. The commission was successful in getting two parts of their recommendations regarding campaign finance adopted by the state legislature, but there are other major proposals, like Jim was earlier talking about redistricting. They had talked about a fairer system of redistricting, and a number of other specific reforms were not adopted. What tends to happen in Illinois is every time we have a crisis, a governor like Blagojevich goes to jail, we have a flurry of activity and we make incremental gains. Right now in the city of Chicago, we have a new ethics task force. The first half of their recommendations have been adopted. The second half are being offered in the city council October 3rd. We are making small gains, but you can't change a culture of corruption simply by small gains. It will take more than a decade. It takes, as Richard has suggested, changes at the top. We need effective officials who not only run on platforms of reform, but actually carry them out. We need to have a variety of specific reforms. One small example, for instance, is a suburban inspector general. We have no one to check on the suburbs. And there are several dozen, there are altogether about 30 or 40 recommendations for reform from the various task force and commissions and the studies at the University of Illinois that we've done that need to be implemented, but they have to be implemented comprehensively, and it takes a change of a generation, not just a change of a day.
My guests are Dick Simpson, a former alderman and professor of political science at the University of Illinois Chicago, Jim Nolan, recently retired senior fellow in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the University of Illinois, and Richard Winters, a professor of government at Dartmouth and former co-editor of State Politics and Policy Quarterly. We're discussing corruption in Illinois politics here on Focus, and we welcome your thoughts this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. What's your impression of Illinois politics today compared to decades past? Are we more politically corrupt than we used to be? Are we a political punchline? Let us know what you think. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We'll continue our conversation in just a few moments. It's time for a short break, though. This is Focus.
Dear Lord, please let the state be good. May he have the wealth of Mayor Bloomberg, the personality of Jon Stewart, the face of Michael Fassbender.
On the next Fresh Air, Mindy Kaling. She plays a single doctor whose personal life is a mess and who struggles to do the right thing in the new show, The Mindy Project. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
Support comes from the Ethics Core Team, organizers of Ethics Awareness Week at Illinois, October 8th through 12th. Topics include student academic integrity, ethics in teaching, social responsibility in science, and more. Information at ethics.granger.illinois.edu.
And welcome back to Focus here on WILL. I'm Craig Cohen, and we are discussing corruption in Illinois politics on today's show. Amid political scandals involving two ex-governors now imprisoned, a state lawmaker drummed out of office for allegedly taking a bribe, a city comptroller accused of misappropriating tens of millions of dollars, it all begs the question, just how corrupt are we? Ethics and Illinois government are topics also being explored at a symposium in Chicago this weekend. Our guests this morning are speaking at that symposium. Dick Simpson is a former Chicago alderman and professor of political science at the University of Illinois Chicago. Jim Nolan is a recently retired senior fellow in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the U of I. And Richard Winters is a professor of government at Dartmouth and a former co-editor of State Politics and Policy Quarterly. We welcome you to the conversation as well at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We'll go next to Marty. He's on a cell phone. Marty, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. A question. A few moments ago, I think you said something about four governors being jailed. I can think of Otto Kerner, Ryan, and the goofy here, Blagojevich. Who was the fourth?
Dan Walker was convicted of white-collar crime unrelated to government, but he was convicted.
Okay.
And,
I didn't think he
just
was...
Just to add on to that, William Stratton, the governor back in the 1950s, was indicted and tried for something and was declared innocent. So it's five of nine indicted, four of nine convicted.
Who was the fifth?
William Stratton, governor back in the
50s. Stratton, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Mel in Urbana. Hi, Mel.
Yes. I think what everyone is talking about is people who have been convicted. And if you've got a state that has mostly like-minded people, they're not likely to go after their friends. But we have a lot of both Republicans and Democrats in this state, and the Republicans go after the Democrats and vice versa.
Well, I really think...
This is Richard. Let me respond to that. That's sort of interesting. I'd never really thought of it that way. But let me repeat... A 180-degree different view. The idea that in a place like Vermont and New Hampshire, they don't go around looking for corruption because they're just trying to cover up for everybody. I don't think that happens. I think rather that in these small homogeneous states, the citizens really believe that they form a community that protects the commonwealth of all of them. And I just don't think that's true for the large heterogeneous states. There isn't that sense of a common community that restrains individuals' behavior and basically says, don't do that, because that's not right.
Jim Nolan?
I just don't think that happens in a political culture of corruption that we're characterizing Illinois.
By the way, one of the very interesting things is that if you look to places like Vermont, which has the least corruption, and you try and figure out, well, what wonderful laws have they passed that cause them to have such little corruption, you find that they have fewer laws related to corruption and ethics than we do.
Yeah.
But they have less corruption.
Yeah.
And that's really a strong evidence that it's not simply a legal matter, but a cultural or historical matter, and a matter of current politics and machine politics. If you trade your city services for votes for the party, or you trade a job at City Hall to work a precinct, or you give a businessman an inflated contract if they give campaign contributions, you've gotten used to the idea that politics is really economics, that it's a trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, ethically, telling the difference between that and taking a $500 bribe to fix the zoning case is very difficult for people in the political machine.
Yeah.
And many of their constituents. And why I think it's not only the history we have, but it's the ongoing political practice to the extent we practice the parochial machine politics, which is the norm in Illinois, not only in Chicago, but in Republican counties like DuPage County.
Let me add just one other factor here that really drives Dick's point home. One of the things that Illinoisans ought to know about their state is that it has basically 25% more elected officials than the next highest ranking state. Illinois has over 40,000 elected officials. Pennsylvania has 30,000. And if you look at the number of governments, that same figure holds. I think it's like 6,800 governments in Illinois. As you multiply the number of governments, you basically multiply the opportunities for corruption. And you also, as Jim pointed out earlier, you sort of diminish the kind of the stakes. That is, it's small-time corruption. So there's a limit as to what prosecutors are going to prosecute here. And I think a lot of corruption in Illinois basically falls below that sort of threshold that triggers the kind of indictment and conviction that a $53 million embezzlement from some town in central Illinois, that's astonishing.
Let me get Jim back into the discussion.
I just, since we've discussed the culture of corruption several times, I want to provide an exercise that I conducted with students of mine at the University of Illinois at Urbana in an American politics class. Most of the students were seniors, many of them headed to law school. And at the beginning of each of these courses, I did it seven times, I asked the students to respond to the following situation. Their older brother had just been charged with a serious DUI, and if he were to be convicted, he would lose his license. He's in his first job after college and absolutely has to have an automobile to do his job. His wife is at home pregnant with their first child. The lawyer for the older brother says to him that, look, he knows his way around the court system intimately, and if he has provided $1,000 in cash beyond his fee, he's confident he can get the charge dismissed. And so the older brother asks the younger brother or sister, who are the class members, what should he do? And the class members respond anonymously, and I total it up. In every case, at least two-thirds of the class members said, go for it. In one class, it was 19 out of 23, and I asked one of those who didn't go for it where she lived, and she said she lived on the Wisconsin-Illinois line.
I'm wondering whether or not one of my older brothers might be in trouble. I'm trying to contemplate how I would respond to that. Wow, that's an interesting exercise, in part, if for no other reason, because knowing your way around the court system is sort of a thinly veiled statement, and it's not clear what that could constitute. So I could see how someone could get swept up in something that might be characterized as corruption without maybe perhaps knowing, or maybe intentionally not wanting to know.
My sense was that most of the students knew what I was getting at with the $1,000 in cash. And the students tended to say, well, that's the way it's done in Illinois, and I'd be the fool if I didn't take advantage of the opportunity. And it was a tough situation, clearly, that yeah. I proposed to them.
And if Dick Simpson and Jim Nolan are correct here, that there really is a culture of corruption in Illinois, what the students were also reacting to is, I'm not surprised that the lawyer is saying this to my brother. That's
yeah.
exactly the way the world works.
Hmm. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and there is still time for your questions or comments about corruption in Illinois politics at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 333-WILL or 800-222-9455. WILL. Richard Winters, you teach students about the American political system. What do you say about corruption in American politics?
I actually look at it from a cross-state, cross-time perspective, and I do make the argument in classes on American state politics that, you know, there are corrupt states and there are states that are not corrupt. And it turns out that we can look at some of the factors, some of the traits that might account for this, and we've already talked about some of it, big states, diverse states, number of governments. But let me add a further factor here that I admonish students about, and it comes back to a comment that Jim Nolan made, that some states have a heightened civic culture. That is to say, these are states that have well-educated voters who are heavily involved civically in the affairs of local and state government. And to the extent that you can generate this civic culture, you can diminish or dampen the rates of corruption in the states. That is to say, those states with what I think of as high political capital, high civic culture, have much lower rates of political corruption than states that don't have these well-educated, civically involved citizens.
Hmm. Is it that, would everybody agree on that point?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go next to Joe in the Illinois town of Belgium. Joe, good morning.
Well, my name's not Joe, and I didn't put that down, but that's okay. What I wanted to bring up is one of the old politicians here in East Central Illinois. His name was Joseph Cannon. We called him over here Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe was in the House of Representatives for quite a while. Got to be Speaker of the House, if I remember right. And one of his admonishments when he was going to be elected was, everybody knew he was corrupt. He's never convicted of any kind of corruption, but he said, you know, you need to vote for the devil you know, not the devil you don't know, which seems to be part of the problem all the way through, isn't it?
By the way, in terms of Uncle Joe Cannon, he was driven out of the speakership by a combination of Democrats and progressive Republicans. So there was action taken, which may have been based in part on his perceived corruption or his dictatorial means as Speaker of the House.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Let's next go to Paul in Champaign County.
Hi. I was expecting to be on right after the guy was talking about the remedies, and I think that's an important point, but I will digress a moment here. And the other caller was talking about sort of using the accusation of corruption as a political tool, and I think that must be going on to some extent, not just between parties, but also intra-party, where they're trying to, they might be as corrupt, but they can get something on one of their rivals, they'll do it. I'm thinking of an example from New York, which isn't the corruption for money, but I was thinking of the sheriff of Wall Street, Spitzer, for moral indiscretion. And Wall Street was gunning for him in a big way. They were looking for something to get on him, and they did. But the example here, and I don't know exactly where it went, and part of the close watcher of Springfield politics or Chicago politics, there's a guy named Hollywood Rick who resigned sort of discreetly, I guess. And I never really read, I don't know if the Tribune actually covered why that happened, but he was a definite opponent. And when Rahm got in, I mean, this is the guy that Obama almost had a fist fight on the floor of the Senate, I believe it was, when Emil Jones had to basically sort of get in between them. So I thanks for letting me have my little digression, but
right.
I really think the idea of corruption as, I'm not taking anything away of the corruption of the state, et cetera, et cetera. It is very bipartisan, but I just wanted to see if you knew any examples of that, or how you think it figures in, if it does.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the call. I'm going to ask Dick Simpson to respond and then go to Jim Nolan. Dick.
Well, first of all, Ricky Hindren is still under suspicion. He hasn't been indicted yet, but a number of people very close to him, the purport of his political organization, who worked in particularly the assessor's office, have been indicted and are going to trial, and the suspicion is the U.S. attorney will go on up the chain and may well indict the former public official that he was referring to as well. Seems the most likely occurrence. It's also the same area where you mentioned earlier Derek Smith has been impeached and thrown out of the House of Representatives, although, strangely enough, he may win re-election. The current public opinion polls favor him, even though many of the Democrats have deserted him.
Jim, where do we put something like the legislative scholarships now ending that used to allow lawmakers to hand out scholarships to, in some cases, kids of lobbyists or
relatives, other legislators.
Exactly. Does that fall in that same category of corruption in your mind?
It was small c, but it was clearly corrupt when it was done, and it was abused throughout the history of the program, even though many legislators were purer than Caesar's wife in creating independent committees that evaluated the applicants and made the decisions for the legislators. But that was an ad hoc kind of scholarship program that probably didn't need to be in place, so it was good that it was ended.
Do we have laws in Illinois that, in essence, maybe encourage corruption among politicians? Is that going too far to say something like that?
Well, we certainly have loopholes. I'll give you one example. The first ethics law in the city of Chicago wasn't adopted until 1987 under Harold Washington. The later period with the aldermen, 31 aldermen have gone to jail so far. Two are under trial at the moment, and so that number may grow even larger. So it's about a 20 or 30% crime rate at City Hall. In the council chambers over the last 40 years. But the aldermen have exempted themselves from supervision by the executive inspector general and have created their own inspector general who is yet to bring a single case of any corruption on the part of any alderman or aldermanic staff. Now, he's only been appointed less than a year, but it looks like the aldermen have simply exempted themselves from any scrutiny.
Similarly, at the state level, the state legislature has an ethics act, but it exempts members from any penalties. There are no sanctions in the act. That doesn't encourage anything, but it certainly suggests that they are less than willing to be investigated.
Before we're down to our final minutes, and I want to ask each of you what could be done to restore the reputation of Illinois politics. But before we do that, Dick Simpson, I understand in a report you published in this past year, you came up with a dollar figure that you characterized as the cost of corruption. Could you explain that and how you came up with it?
Yes, our best estimate, and it can only be an estimate so far, is the cost of corruption to the Illinois taxpayers is at least $500 million a year. And what we did was take a number of different scandals and some consequences of immediate events. An example is the weeks after Rod Blagojevich was impeached, the bond rating dropped in Illinois, and it cost us an extra $20 million for the next bond issue. Trials of these 1,848 people who've been convicted often runs into millions of dollars per trial because it takes such evidence to bring convictions. The hired truck scandal in Chicago cost $24 million and so forth. When you look across all of these different areas, we make the estimate of $500 million. It may be even higher. And that's a per-year cost.
Let's since we just have a couple of minutes left, I do want to know what each of you think could be done to restore the reputation of Illinois politics. I'll start with Jim Nolan. Jim.
Well, I think we need a strong, positive leadership at the gubernatorial level over a period of time to help change the image through the governorship. Second, I would propose increased civic education. Illinois provides less civics education in the public schools than I think many states do.
Richard Winters.
Yeah, I would only add, I was listening to another NPR program, and ex-Secretary of Defense Robert Gates was asked a similar kind of question and answered it with the mirror example. It really, at root, rests on the active involvement of citizens in office holding and the active promulgation, basically, of ethical standards out there. And that's in part a voter and office holder running for election. That's one way of getting from the bottom up in terms of curing corruption.
And Dick Simpson.
Yes, I agree with all the suggestions that have been made. In addition, I would make it very clear by adoption of ethics laws in Illinois and in particular places like Chicago that patronage and nepotism are illegal and will not be tolerated by the government, that that we will not allow double dipping, that is, hold two governmental jobs or lobbying before one governmental agency by other governmental officials has been a frequent source of corruption. All of these can be curbed by legislation. It's not a cure-all. I like better the suggestion of Jim Nolan that we do a much deeper and more complete civic education.
Dick Simpson is a former Chicago alderman and is now a professor of political science at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Dick Simpson, thanks so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Richard Winters is a professor of government at Dartmouth and a former co-editor of State Politics and Policy Quarterly. Richard, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you for inviting me.
And James Nolan is a recently retired senior fellow in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the University of Illinois. Jim, thank you for being with us.
Good to be with you.
We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. A reminder, you now have a second chance to hear this program every weeknight at 8 on WILL AM 580. If you know somebody who might enjoy hearing the program but is for some reason unable to listen weekday mornings at 10, let them know about our nightly rebroadcasts at 8 p.m. If you know anyone who might enjoy hearing Focus but lives outside of our listening area, let them know. We stream the program live every day at will.illinois.edu, where you can also listen back to past programs. And Focus is also available as a free downloadable podcast. To sign up, again, visit the Focus page of our website. Again, that's will.illinois.edu/focus. On tomorrow's show, Kimberly Cronick will sit in for me, and she will have what I believe will be a fascinating discussion about the politics of philanthropy as seen through the lens of efforts to support breast cancer research and treatment. In the United States and increasingly worldwide, the movement to end breast cancer is symbolized by that pink ribbon, and the strategy is to raise billions of dollars for research and to promote early detection through mammograms. Cause-driven marketing encourages us to buy products that display that pink ribbon and to participate in, say, 5K races for a cure. But are these the best strategies? Where did they come from and who really benefits? We'll go beyond the pink ribbon to the politics of breast cancer, civic engagement, and corporate philanthropy with Samantha King, author of Pink Ribbons, Inc. That's on tomorrow's program. Today's show was produced by Travis Stanzel. Other members of our Focus team are Pam Dempsey, Kimberly Cronick, and Jim Meadows. Kyle Mabry is our technical director. He handled your calls today. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks so much for joining us.